guess what? We love doing this show, which is why we do it for free. And so all we ask is that you rate and review us on Apple Podcasts so that others can easily find us. In fact, we're going to give you a little incentive. This season, we have a contest, and we'll select a review, and that person will win some amazing First Gens gear. So go do it now.
Welcome to First Gens. This is a podcast about first generation Americans and filling in the blanks beside hyphen. I'm Preen.
And this is Sky.
Yes, it is. And this is a special episode that we have today. If you're one of our listeners based in the United States of America, you would know that there's a lot of things happening in the news and in the world of politics on a daily basis.
Yes, there's a lot of garbage.
would you say? Yes.
That's happening in our government. And that's kind of being repeated on a 24-hour news cycle. And so it's everywhere. It's in your face at all times. We figured that we wanted to take some time and take a break and talk about and define some like basic terms. Because, this discourse is happening in the public sphere, but, it's very rare to actually news cycles to like take a step back and start from square one. And so that's what we want to do.
Exactly. And because there's so much being thrown at us on a daily basis, sometimes it's hard to keep track. And sometimes things just get confusing, things overlap. And we really wanted to just break it down for you all. So just like within like the first generation community, there's so many different issues that, kind of come across. So what we wanted to start with, start with the bare basics. We kind of had this in our first episode. We kind of utilized it for clarity. We've also kind of posted it on our social media when Ben Carson made the stumble mistake to miscategorize what an immigrant was in junction to a slave. And so we had to really kind of clarify and let Mr. Carson and other people know that that's not the same thing. It's very different. So an immigrant is a person who comes to live permanently in a foreign country by choice. They work and contribute to society.
Period. Done. Point blank. Done. Point nothing blank. More. Nothing less. You're just one person leaving one country and going to another to live there. That's it.
Yes.
There's nothing nefarious about it. There's nothing inherently good about it. It's just a simple fact. It is what it is.
It is what it is.
Yes. People try to make it seem like, folks who are immigrants, have some hidden agenda or... maybe like the good versus bad immigrants. Mm-hmm. And that's just not a thing. Most immigrants are immigrating because they have to, they have a need to, colonization was real and it messed up a lot of countries around the world. And a lot of times when people are coming here, it's because their country's been messed up by, the United States or some other European power. And they have to get out of there to try to live a better life. Or, some people just immigrate because they want to immigrate. I have a friend who immigrated from here to Paris. So, there's nothing inherently wrong about that either. So it's whether they're seeking a better life because they're coming from a place that's more impoverished, or they just simply want to move to another country. Neither way is either good or bad. And how they choose to immigrate or how they're forced to immigrate, should I say, based upon policies, does not inherently make them better or worse than anybody else.
Thank you. Because again, we had to really clarify all of that because, it all gets lost and it gets muffled. And so exactly what Sky said about they're not being good immigrants or bad immigrants and whatnot, we've seen in the past few weeks the current migrant and immigrant situation happening in Texas. And so we've learned that over 2,000 migrant children are still being held in detention camps and are being separated from their families as they try to cross the Mexican border into Texas. And this has been especially heartbreaking and just very disheartening overall as like I learned more and more about the situation, because I saw yesterday it posted like on Instagram, a mother was reunited like with her child after weeks of being separated and while the child was being held in a detention camp. And the child, yeah, like there were cameras like around like filming them and like taking their pictures and whatnot, but you could clearly see the child was completely like detached from his mom. Mm-hmm. He didn't make much eye contact. He spoke like very softly, and he was just very detached. Like she was hugging him and like soothing him, and you could just tell that there had been some kind of, obviously, like I've been saying, detachment, but, you know, a lot of people are commenting, like, you know, mistrust and how that now...
It's trauma.
Yes, because of the trauma, the actual PTSD that this child has faced. And he couldn't have been older than 7 or 8 years old. With everything happening and these policies, that at the end of the day, these are human beings and these are families. These are young children that are coming to a foreign country and then being taken away from the only people they know, their parents, who are supposed to be there to help and protect and console them. So all that I ask is just for a little bit of, I don't know, compassion and humanity from all of it, because it's just a very, very disheartening situation. And so many of these children are currently placed throughout the country now. Like the detention camps have spanned all the way from up north to Florida and various like American states. And so it's not even just in Texas. So the issue that's happening now is the parents they don't even know where their children are. They have no idea, like, exactly what detention camp they're being held at.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, they came to this country illegally, quote unquote, which is no one is illegal. Or, like, why don't they just become American citizens? Like, okay, let's think about that for a second. To become an American citizen, you have to have a green card for at least 5 years. Mm-hmm. Sounds easy enough, right? Like, you just have to wait 5 years. That sounds easy. No, boo. To get an actual green card, like that process in and of itself is you have to jump through so many hoops. Like yeah. You can only get a green card if you have a family member who is an American citizen and they file for you to become like to get your green card. Mm-hmm. And they vouch for you through that. That's even difficult. You can get a green card if you are a refugee or someone seeking asylum. However, the U.S. government's the one who kind of considers asylum seeker status or refugee status. Also, like, there's only a limited number of spaces for that. Mm-hmm. There's a literal lottery system where, you know, just every year there's a certain number of people from a certain country that can come over, and then those people are chosen randomly. Mm-hmm. And that's it. There's no rhyme or reason to it. It's a lottery. It's just the luck of the draw. And we know how unlikely it is that anyone will win, you know, like our state lottery, let alone a lottery for an entire country.
Right. Right.
And so, goodness. I mean, and there's like other like very, like very, very niche things that you may be able to get a green card from. But that's basically it. Yep. It's either luck or you have someone here already. And so it's not as easy as people think. People say just become a citizen, just, you know, do it the quote unquote right way. But there is no right way because America makes it so hard to become a citizen here. And, you know, people say that this is the land of the free and people are just coming to seek better lives. But we're not allowing them to have those better lives because our government makes it nearly impossible.
But what we want to make sure that everyone knows about, like, this episode is that, yeah, like, we want to make sure that people understand and can kind of comprehend, like, the breakdown of each of these, like, different issues and topics. But we want to also give you a resource to actually make a change and feel like you can actually be a part of helping. And so there's a Texas nonprofit that has established a hotline to help reunite immigrant families that were separated at the border. And so we're going to be able to put, like, all of this on our social media and on our website from this episode. But I just kind of wanted to express that there is a hotline for these families. It's run by RAICES, which is spelled R-A-I-C-E-S. It's an acronym. They can be reached at 1-866-378-2667. They have a staff that's available from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time, but callers can leave voicemails at any time. So this is for families that have been separated. If you have, like, any tips or information about, like, children that have been separated, it's just, like, a hotline that's open, like, 100%, but they're basically going to be acting as a liaison to provide more information and to, like, connect these families. So it's just another amazing resource that we wanted to share. All right, something else that has been circulating since the formation of this Trump administration has been the Muslim travel ban. So we actually learned that the Muslim travel ban was upheld by the Supreme Court. What we wanted to do was actually break down, like, what a Muslim person of faith is. So Sky's going to give us the definition.
Yes. So a Muslim is someone who follows or practices Islam. And Islam is a monotheistic Abrahamic religion. And that's just a fancy word to say that they worship one God. And Abrahamic just means that it was the teachings come from Abraham. And I also want to mention that Christianity is also an Abrahamic religion. And so is Judaism, I believe. 90% sure on that. If I'm wrong, please at me and teach me something. But the major religions are actually come from the same person of Abraham. Yeah. But anyway, Muslims consider the Quran their holy book, and that it's the verbatim word of God as it was revealed to the prophet and messenger Muhammad.
Yes. Thank you, Sky. Thank you so much for saying that so eloquently. So really, if we want to keep it, like, 100% real, we can go back to September 11th, 2001, and talk about the tragedy that happened and talk about how that has gravely impacted how American views and sees terrorists. And the biggest unfortunate case, like, throughout this entire situation, I think, like, with the Muslim ban, is fueling fear. It's fueling fear, and it's really reinstating and reinforcing the many stereotypes that are around the generalization of the Muslim faith, and taking different extremities, like, that have maybe, like, manifested from the faith that is very diverse, and basically saying that they are all that believe this are kind of like a threat to society. The Muslim ban basically is a ban on travel from several predominantly Muslim countries. And what Donald Trump stated on Tuesday, June 26, 2018, was that, you know, it was somewhat of a political victory because the Supreme Court upheld his ban. And so it was a 5-4 vote. And the court's conservatives said that the president's power to, quote unquote, secure the country's border was delegated by Congress over decades of immigration lawmaking and was not undermined by Mr. Trump's history and previous statements that he said about the dangers of Muslims in America. However, I just feel like the entire travel ban is really trying to reinforce fear. It's all like a fear tactic.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned September 11th, and you know, that's when things really, I mean, there's always been prejudice against Muslims in our country. Do not get me wrong. But that's, I think, when the government started helping to really stoke that fear. Because, you know, if we look at September 11th, that was pulled off by Al-Qaeda. You know, some people will say that was an inside job by the U.S. government. I'm not going to get into the 9/11 too much and the conspiracy theories or whatever. But as a very high level, it was performed by Al-Qaeda. And, you know, people, well, the government will say, like, Al-Qaeda is Islam and they're Muslim. And that's not true, really. It's just like a bastardized version of Islam. It's a bastardized version of their faith. And just like there are, you know, Christian extremists who take the Bible and use it for their own doings and use it to kill people. And that's been done throughout all of history. And it's still happening today. The same thing's happening with Islam. And so, like, these folks are not true representations of what it means to be a Muslim or what it means to be Islam. And I'm saying this as someone who is not Muslim. So, like, please know that I'm speaking from an outside perspective. But, you know, they're not true representatives, because Islam teaches, like, peace and love and the same things that all the other major religions teach of nonviolence and to not go out and to discriminate against others based upon their religion. And so when we talk about, like, terrorists, you know, most terrorists are usually using a bastardized form of whatever religion that they worship.
Pretty much. And so, yeah, I 100% agree with Sky. It's really important to know just, like, the difference between those who, just, like, what the faith, like, actually means, really, and just, like, breaking that down so that people are just, like, more aware.
Yes, and so that also goes for ISIS or the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant is whatever, or ISIL. It's called it a couple of different things. So Islamic State group, it's just all a bastardization of the actual teachings of the Quran.
So an organization that you all may be familiar with is the ACLU. And the ACLU has basically been fighting President Trump's Muslim ban ever since it was kind of brought to light. And the ACLU is actually doing a lot of, or formulating a lot of different protests. And again, they're a great resource for you to learn more about what we can do and what you can do to combat the Muslim ban. And so you can find out more information at aclu.org and kind of find out what lawsuits that they've been filing and all that they've been doing since we first heard of this Muslim ban up until now. All right, so next up, we have MS-13. So I'm sure that you may have heard about this just, like, through the news on social media and may have questions about, like, what MS-13 actually is. So MS-13 is an American-turned-international gang started by refugees in Los Angeles back in the 1980s. So this gang was formed by many El Salvadorian refugees, again, in the West Coast, specifically Los Angeles. And then it kind of trickled throughout the years to the East in predominantly New York cities. And so in areas, you have, like, Long Island and different parts of New York and up north. And that's kind of where they migrated. And when a lot of deportations happened in America over, like, the last, like, let's say 15 years, a lot of those members of that gang were then sent back to their home countries. So they were sent back to El Salvador and different Central American countries. And that is kind of the basis of the formation of the gang, how it kind of spread and where it is now. And so what's kind of been circulating, like, throughout the news and society about MS-13 is that they are, it's basically a gang that is trying to make their way into America and they are trying to illegally migrate here to the States, whereas these are people that have actually been in America for decades, that have been part of this country for, again, decades. So the misconception, I think, is that, again, another fear tactic as far as immigration and our borders are concerned. Yes, there are MS-13 gang members that are, you know, not in America, but there are many that are also already here. And it's also another misconception about, like, the size of MS-13. And not to say that, you know, gangs are not threats. Gangs are obviously threats. We have many here in America. But as far as MS-13 is compared, it's not particularly large, and nor is it growing. MS-13 members are about 10,000 in number, which makes up less than 1% of approximately 1.4 million gang members existing in the United States. And that's according to the FBI. And I'm getting these specific stats from the New York Times. They posted an article in June 2018. So I just kind of wanted to, like, state that and, like, clarify that, because there's been, again, another very huge fear tactic tied to immigration, and specifically this gang and the horrible, I think, correlation it has with Hispanic immigrants, which I think needs to be dispelled to an extent.
Yeah, and I think that, well, I know that this administration is all about misdirection and confusion. And so that's one of their tactics, is kind of like throwing out, like, red herrings, or just throwing out, like, distractions for folks. And this is just another one of them. You know, we have, like Perrine said, millions of gang members in the States that are domestic gangs, that are gangs that were, you know, born and bred and raised by red-blooded Americans, quote unquote. And, you know, to think that MS-13 in particular takes up such a small population of the world and of the country, to think about the number of folks who are trying to immigrate here, like, they're, you know, just statistically, that is, like, if you were in a statistics class, excuse me, like, you would find that statistically insignificant, and you wouldn't even, like, apply that to your findings. So this is really just the administration throwing something out there to misdirect and misguide people, because most people aren't going to go out and do a simple Google search to find out that something's not true, because most people, you know, people believe what they want to believe, is what I'll say.
They really do. And again, it's just, like, another horrible result of how this can negatively impact a larger group of people that are not affiliated. And so we, again, this all, again, ties back into immigration and, you know, quote unquote, border control and the legalities and the ins and outs of it. But we're also going to just include on our website, again, yes, MS-13 is, you know, a gang that is known for violence. And again, we stated the population of that gang, but also how gang violence in America is a prevalent problem, just, like, overall, like, already existing here in this country. So we're just going to list a few articles and resources that will kind of give information and kind of shine light on how former gang members offer advice on how to combat MS-13. Also, just ways that if you, you know, may, like, suspect someone who may be interested in joining a gang, different ways that you can be a resource to them. Another thing to just keep in mind and remember is that people, one of the biggest, like, reasons why gangs are attractive to certain individuals is because they want a sense of belonging and they want to feel like they are a part of something. I had a little cousin, I kind of get choked up about this, I'm not gonna cry, but I had a little cousin, her name was Wilta, and she was killed at the age of 15 a few years ago in New York. And Wilta got caught up in the wrong crowd. Wilta was gang affiliated, and she had people in her circle at a very young age that were horrible influences. it resulted in her death and gun violence. And just, again, to let people know that gang affiliation, gun violence, just violence in this country, it happened to a multitude of families. It happened to my Liberian family. And it's something that, you know, we live with every day. And again, just to shine light and let people know that when talking about like gangs and like safety and whatnot, it can happen to multiple creeds and backgrounds.
So we've given you some specific terms and specific resources, but, you know, we're thinking about like, how does this affect us? You know, like I said before, there's a 24-hour news cycle. And when it's just, there's something coming at you from every angle, it's on the TV, it's on your radio, it's on your podcasts, it's on your social media. It's everywhere. You can't get away from it. And there's this thing called the collective unconscious. And the collective unconsciousness is basically shared by everyone in the world, every human that's ever lived and that will ever live. And it's just the idea that there's this deep unconscious mind that's not shaped by personal experience, but is shaped by society and the things that happen within society. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, kind of an extension and offshoot of this is the fact that, like, scientists have now proven and have learned that, like, trauma affects your DNA. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, like, your ancestors' trauma is living with inside of you, literally inside of your DNA right now. And so with all of this going on in our collective and how it's affecting our psyches, it's important to make sure that you're talking about it and making sure that you're having your outlets about it. Mental health is so important, and thinking about like all of the trauma that we see on a daily basis, because that's what we're witnessing. Yeah. We are collectively witnessing the trauma of folks. We're enduring our own trauma by watching it. And, you know, the reminders that it may say about your own marginalized identities or how it's affecting you personally, you know, or your family personally. So it's good to have an outlet for that. Some people like to talk. Some people like to blog. Some people like to write in their journals. But it's important to keep your mental health up. Yes. And so we wanted to share a couple of different options for mental health and mental wellness during these times, because it's so important. Since when you think of mental health, you think of going to a therapist or a counselor or psychologist, psychiatrist. And so that's, of course, an option. If you have health insurance, you can go to psychologytoday.com and try to find a therapist on there. And so basically how the website works is you just go there, you type in either your city or your zip code, and then you can search through, you know, however many psychiatrists or psychologists are around you. And trying to find the one who will fit best. You can sort by insurance. You can sort by distance from you. You can, a lot of them have their pictures up. So if you want someone like that shares your background, your race, your ethnicity, then you can, you know, try to find that on there. But that's, you know, kind of the traditional route. When people think of therapy and mental health, they think of going down and sitting and talking to somebody. And, you know, I think that's wonderful. But it can also be unattainable for some folks, especially if you don't have insurance. And so for those types of instances, or if you need kind of more immediate help, you can always get licensed help online. So I found a website, betterhelp.com. And what you do is you're connected with a licensed counselor, and it starts off at $35 a week. And they do have financial aid offering. So if that's kind of steep, right? Because $35 a week is a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know? And so if that's too steep for folks, they do offer that option. And you're connected with someone online. You can do video talk. You can just do like a phone chat, or you can do a text chat, all on betterhelp.com. And then, you know, I think most people who listen to podcasts have heard a podcast sponsored by Talkspace.com. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I definitely know about Talkspace.
See, exactly. Everyone has like a discount code for Talkspace.
Yes.
So I will say Talkspace is more expensive than BetterHelp. It starts at $49 a week. So, you know, if you are interested in Talkspace, I would say, you know, search out the podcasts that already have a discount code and you can get started from that. I do not have one, or we do not have one,
yet,
but you know,
yet.
There's tons
Talk
out
space.
there.
Do you hear us? We are shouting you out.
Yes,
If you
we
want to
are.
come on over.
Yes, yes, yes. But that's also licensed help. So these are all folks who are trained professionals who've been doing this for years who can help you. And if you want to go like the unpaid route, because therapy is expensive, $35 a week, $49 a week, your copay, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different options. And this is also like really helpful if you need help in the immediate, or if you just need to vent immediately. There's a crisis call center. And so with the crisis call center, anyone can access this. I think a lot of times when people hear the word like crisis or think of like a hotline, they automatically associate it with suicide and suicidal thoughts. And that's not the case. You know, all of these resources are available, even if you just need to vent, if you're having a really bad day, if you need someone to talk to. A crisis is really just when you need an emotional release. That's what a crisis is. You know, it's not, it doesn't have to look a specific way for you to get help.
Yeah.
And so with the crisis call center, that phone number is 1-800-273-8255. And this will all be on our website and in the description. Or there's an also like a text option. If you're unlike me, I hate texting, but certain people love it. And so, and if you want to remain like, if you don't want to talk on the phone or if you can't talk on the phone, you just text the word answer to 839863. And then you can, you know, text with somebody who's there to help you get through your crisis.
That's a great option. I didn't even know that was something that you could do. So that's amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just trying to help everybody out here.
Yes. I love it.
Yes. And so everyone on Crisis Call Center has been through a specific training. They're not licensed, I will say, but they have all gotten training on how to like be a good helper to folks who are going through crises. And there's, you know, there's tons of these options out there. There's Lifeline Crisis Chat. And so that's also for anyone who just is going through a hard time and needs to talk. Mm-hmm. But this is more online. And so if you want that option, if you don't like the text, but you want to do it kind of non-verbally and you want to do it on a computer, you just go to www.contact-usa.org. And that's the Lifeline Crisis Chat. And you can, you know, hop on there. The chat specialists are, you know, again, not licensed, but they are trained to help you get through whatever difficulty you may be going through. And it's anonymous. You can just sign in, use a fake name if you want to, talk to somebody, get it out there. And then, you know, once you've, you know, felt like a catharsis, you can sign off and, you know, go about your life, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a ton of other ones out there. There's healthfulchat.com, mm-hmm. and that's like a peer-to-peer option. It has moderators. It's healthfulchat.org. And then there's Blah Therapy, which is peer-to-peer, which is unmoderated. And if you want to kind of be someone who's listening instead of venting, if you want to give back, Blah Therapy is a good option because you don't have to have any specific kind of training for it. You just kind of, yeah, you know, if you just want to help somebody out who's having a hard time and just like listen to them, you just go to blahtherapy.com and you can be either a listener or a venter. And I'll say with Healthful Chat and Blah Therapy, like I said, they're peer-to-peer. So it's not anyone who's had any specific kind of training, mm-hmm. but it's really just, you know, folks trying to help other folks out.
Yeah.
And I think that can also be super helpful, especially like if talking to a professional or talking to someone who's trained is daunting and, you know, kind of scary and anxiety ridden sometimes. Sometimes it's nice just to talk to other people who are going through the exact same thing you're going through. So those are two options for that.
Awesome.
Keep your mental health in check, y'all. It's so important. And it's the only way that we're going to make it through this administration and life in general. You know, like life can be hard. Life can throw obstacles in your way. It can throw, you know, great joy in your way as well. And if you're not taking care of your mental health, you're going to miss those highlights and those high points. As well as like feeling those low points, you know, too low. So just make sure you're taking care of yourselves.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So we definitely provide you all with tons of information. Hopefully all information that you can use like to your benefit. And so we're going to, again, have all of these links on our website. We're going to make sure to post them on social media as well. So just be on the lookout and feel free to just like interact with us, ask us any questions. We're open to elaborate and just be there for you like during this time, because like Sky said, it's all like very like weighing on, you know, everyone's day to day, like spiritually, physically, emotionally, it can really impact you. And so just know that we are here as a resource for you, and we'll definitely have all of that available. So thanks for joining us on our very special resourceful episode of First Gens.
Special episodes always make me think of the 90s when it'd be like a very special episode of Family Matters or something like that, you know?
Did they do that? Like what? Like they used
you
to
don't remember
that?
Those?
No.
Yeah. They used to, like... It'd be like they would talk about like a certain issue, like it would usually be like a one off character. So it'd be like a very special episode. Let's just use Family Matters since I brought that up. Like Laura would like bring home a friend who was like being abused by her parents or whatever. Mm. And like they would have like Carl and whatever the mama's name was. I don't remember her name. I feel bad. So the mom and the dad, I'm just gonna say that.
I can't even
would you know like have like yes. a sit down with their kids about like what abuse is and why it's not good, and they would get that kid help, and you would never see them again. The Golden Girls did this actually with like an episode with Mario Lopez. Uh-huh. Mario Lopez played Dorothy's student. Uh-huh. And he wrote like a really good essay, and so she like got it submitted to the newspaper. Uh-huh. And it was about like he was an immigrant, I think from Cuba. Uh-huh. And he was in the country undocumented. And when Dorothy had it, girl, they were progressive.
What?
Like Golden Girls was always talking about something. They had a ton of special episodes.
Wow.
but like out. By posting it in the paper, it brought like attention to him, and so he actually ended up getting deported
because
the government was right. And so like it just kind of like so those special episodes, quote unquote, like shined a light on an area of society that like wouldn't necessarily be covered by, you know, a sitcom or a show like Golden Girls. Wow. So anyway, every time you say a special episode, that's what's going through my mind. I just like hear this like like very like ethereal music in the background, and then like at the end there was always like sit down where they break like the fourth wall and directly in the camera.
Uh-huh,
mm-hmm.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Like,
I remember
you need
this.
Help, call 1-800 end abuse now. And uh-huh. It's like, girl, that's too many letters, but okay, girl.
That's too many letters. I know exactly what you mean, but yeah, we definitely just had a special episode, so thanks so much for listening.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find us. And it's so easy to do. You just go in there, click a little star to subscribe, and then just write a quick little comment. I mean, I would hope that you would give us 5 stars. But you know, this isn't payola, so I'm not going to try to convince you too hard. We can also be found on SoundCloud, Radio Public, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at First Gens. That's the number 1, STGENS. Plus, get extra content on our website, firstgenspodcast.com. First Gens was created by Perrine DeShield. The show is co-hosted by Perrine and Sky Wilson. Our musical composer is the wonderful Nick Stubblefield. First Gens is a proud member of Huga, an amazing co-working space based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for taking a chance on us. Cool.